This sound was recorded on the 29th of May, 1963. Medium Leslie Flynn.
Oh, I do, Mickey, very
clearly. And sometimes I think it must be rather difficult for people to hear properly. I mean, if the sort of conditions aren't always as we would like, sometimes it's difficult for us to know exactly how we're registering.
Oh, is that so, Mickey? But I always hear you.
I suppose I should be saying something about birthdays.
Should you?
Yes, getting on for June, isn't it?
Oh, you mean birthday into the spirit world?
Yes, spirit birthday.
Yes.
To do with your husband.
Yes, that's very clever.
He's reminding me, he says I mustn't forget, he says, to mention the fact it's getting very close to my spiritual anniversary, spiritual birthday.
How very nice. I'm so glad you remembered.
Of course I remember.
Oh, hello, darling.
I try desperately to remember as much as possible for various reasons.
Yes.
One is because I'm happy to remember many things. Another reason is because I think it's good proof for you.
It is.
Not that you necessarily need proof now, but should you play the tapes to people, it's nice if they can hear me say things which could only be said by me in any case.
Yes, that's so, darling. Yes.
And then there's the book, you see. You must provide some evidence in the book.
Yes.
Are you having difficulty? Why did you move?
Oh, I haven't.
Well, I heard you move your chair.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm so sorry, dear. I was just relaxing. Well, I wanted to ask you if you'd mind my taking your book to Psychic Press, because...
My dear, I don't mind where you take it, providing it's published.
You see, Arthur Finley said he hoped Psychic Press would do it for me. So I thought, if you wouldn't mind, I would go there next. If I go to Ryders, it means a long, long wait again.
Well, I should try then the Psychic Press.
Yes.
Because the only thing there is, I suppose, it's rather preaching to the converted.
Well, I don't know. Finley's books go all over the world and they're translated in all kinds
of
languages.
That's rather an exception, I think.
And even in Braille, you know.
Yes. Well, of course, his books are so remarkable.
Yes.
I'm not suggesting ours isn't too. I should be very disappointed if it isn't. I like to feel that our book also has a place. In fact, I know jolly well it has.
Yes.
And I think it's going to arouse a lot of interest among a lot of people.
I hope
but
so.
But I'm so anxious to reach those who are not normally interested, or people who, shall we say, are not au fait with the subject.
Yes, yes, I do see that point. Darling, what could we put in the way of a descriptive paragraph, you know, what they call the blurb? For instance, could I say, London publisher returns to tell the truth about life after death, something like that? I have to have something to put inside the cover. Something rather startling, you know.
It really is going to be my book, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's very clever. Really, there's a sense of humour on the other side.
I've even got to do the advertising. Would you believe it?
I'm frankly sorry. Oh, dear. Well, you see, I'm not very good at these things. And they do say that the blurb, it's a horrible word, isn't it, that it helps to sell a book.
He's thinking it out.
Yes, evidently.
Because you could say, a London publisher... or a late London publisher, unfortunately cannot obtain the support of his own company to publish his book, so he has to go elsewhere.
I see.
No, I mean, it's just teasing.
Yes, I don't know. That would be rather... I don't know. Wouldn't that upset?
I'm not serious.
No. Oh, I see, darling, yes.
Good heavens, I don't mean it at all.
No.
But you'd have thought they would have published it.
Well, I think...
What is their excuse?
I don't... Mr. Millard, I think, would like to have done because of his links with you, but I don't think he's solely responsible for the firm, you see.
Oh, I'm sure he isn't.
No.
But I would have liked my own firm to have published it.
Yes, but they had it 5 months. I couldn't wait any longer.
Of course, they don't really accept it, do they?
No.
As from me, I mean.
No.
What a beautiful boost that would have been if they'd have published it, and they'd have also said that we have no doubt in our mind that this is.
Yes. Well, Mr. Millard hadn't any doubt. He said, oh, that's him all right.
It would be so marvellous, of course, if they would publish it. There's no possible hope for that.
Oh, none whatever, darling, no. But I should like Finlay's firm, I think, because he's been so kind.
I do hope they do publish it. When are you going to see the Psychic Press?
Well, it won't be finished for 2 weeks, dear, the book. You've given me some interesting information the last few weeks, and I'm adding it to this book. Oh, this afternoon, dear, Frank Lear wants to try to make a sketch of you again. Would you oblige?
Well, I'll certainly be there, and I'll certainly do what I can. A great deal depends, obviously, on him.
Yes,
if he can see me sufficiently well enough to draw me, so well and so good. The man's a jolly good artist.
Yes, he is.
There's no reason why he shouldn't do a good portrait if he can really see me.
The thing is, would you show yourself in, you know, as you are now in spirit, exuberantly fit and happy?
In other words, you want a really good picture of me as I am, and if you can remember how I looked in my early 20s.
Oh, but I didn't meet you until you were nearly 60, dear.
I know from photographs I'm talking about.
Oh,
maybe
I see.
You've got a pretty good idea what I look like now.
No, I'd rather just if you could show yourself about the time when I first knew you, because I've got some...
Well, you just said you wanted to see me as I am now.
Oh, yes, that's what I mean.
I don't look 60.
Oh, you don't?
Good heavens, no. You look as old as the hills in comparison to me.
Oh dear, do I? And I was 20 years younger on earth.
I'm in a very teasing mood.
Yes, so I noticed.
No, seriously.
Yes.
I look very young. I look, well, I suppose I look about 26, 27.
Do you, Jack?
And my voice, when I come and speak to you, may sound older, but that's partly due to the fact I try desperately to get my own sort of personality over. As you remember me, I mean my physical, old physical self. But actually, of course, I'm much younger over here. My mind is very alert.
Well, it always was.
Yes, but without all the complications of material body, I feel so different. I wish I could explain how that is, but there's a feeling of lightness all the time, a feeling of everything being so congenial, so pleasant.
Yes, I'm so
happy
for you.
There's no struggling, there's no effort.
No.
Wonderful feeling.
I'm sure it is. I'm so glad. Yes, well...
As for this blurb for the book, I have to think that one out. Mm-hmm. I really don't know what to suggest.
No. Well, don't worry about it, darling.
It isn't usual for the author to write his own blurb, is it?
No, perhaps the editorial staff will do it. I only just, you know.
What should we talk about?
Well, shall I leave it to you, dear? I wanted to ask you more about the spirit body. For instance, what colour is your hair now?
Very like it was in my early 20s.
Yes.
Very much like. No grey. No grey hair.
Oh, no, of course not.
No baldness.
No. I think you once said it was a kind of halfway house when you came to talk to me here. Is that so?
But well, it is a kind of halfway house. It's as if I'm not altogether, you might say, in your world, and yet very conscious of it. Not altogether in my own world, and yet conscious of that.
It's a
sort of intermediate state. It's a condition of sort of in between the two. One can be and is, at the time of communication, in a sense conscious of both, and yet not fully in accord, or fully, shall we say, in rapport with either.
I Yes. That's very interesting here.
That's where, in a sense, it is rather difficult, because one finds oneself concentrating, for instance, so hard on trying to recapture memories of the earth and at the same time transmit those thoughts to you, and at the same time, to some extent, being affected by the present vibration of thought force of my own life here. It's a strange intermingling.
Yes,
the thing is trying to clarify and to keep on the one vibration, that is the vibration that one is communicating on a level so that one can make oneself understood and speak coherently and accurately. I find it's difficult always to be absolutely dead accurate about material things.
Yes, you do very well.
I remember things in part. I suppose it is that I remember certain things about certain peoples, certain conditions of one's past life, but not always the full details. Some things seem to escape one. I suppose in a sense, of course, you have the same thing on earth. I mean, I remember I used to sometimes be very forgetful. I couldn't remember always certain things that I would have liked to remember, and I used to have to try and conjure it up and think it all out. Things would escape me, even on your side, as they do most people, I think.
Yes.
Sometimes you forgot what you did yesterday.
Yes, but in spirit, your memory, I suppose, is perfect.
Yes, of course, but then, of course, you're functioning in the conditions which are normal and natural to you.
Yes.
And also in a much more rarefied atmosphere and a much more clear, you might say, condition. There's nothing to sort of get in the way. For instance, on Earth, so much gets in the way. And also the brain, although it can be and is a marvelous instrument, obviously, at the same time, it can only contain so much and hold so much, and sometimes there's confusion, and it's not always possible to pick out things immediately and accurately. Here, there seems to be a greater clarity of thought.
Yes, there would be. How is your little home in spirit and your garden?
Oh, delightful. I wish you could see it. It's perfect. You'd love it.
Well, I suppose I do at night.
Well, you do, but unfortunately you don't remember anything about it. Yes. I wish you could. It would be so nice if you could wake up in the morning and have a very clear recollection of things. As I said, I think once or twice before, if you could have a pencil and paper and dot things down.
Yes.
You could be surprised what you could recapture on awakening.
Yes. Oh, I do. I've got a book full of those things.
Very good. Very helpful.
Yes. And what kind of flowers have you got at the moment?
Every kind of flower you can think of, I see.
Yes. And the animals are all right?
Yes. I don't see all the flowers in my garden, or not. But I've seen every kind of flower that one could imagine, and many more besides which I have had no knowledge of on earth at all. And of course, we've every kind of scenery, every kind of condition of life. I've seen magnificent trees, magnificent forests, magnificent plains, mountains, lakes. There's everything in nature, I think, practically, that you can think of is reproduced here, but even more beautiful. And if you can imagine nature without all the, if one can use the expression, irritants, I've never seen insects, for instance.
Oh, no.
I presume they might exist on some spheres. Certainly I've not seen them on mine.
No. Which sphere are you on, chiefly?
Well, there again, there's no such thing as a title. One loosely uses terms such as spheres, first, second, or third, but that's really, in a sense, rather ridiculous, because, in a sense, a sphere is a plane of consciousness to which you happen to vibrate.
Yes.
It has no title or name. I mean, you call the earth the earth, you call the sun, the moon, the stars, but they're just names. They don't convey anything, in a sense. I mean, when you talk about the earth, you know what you're talking about. It's a sort of forward picturization. But the point is that names in themselves, in that sense, are not important, and they have no real meaning to us.
Yeah.
I mean, when people talk about the summer land and and then the third sphere and so on, they're only just using those expressions to try to give you an indication, but or perhaps of one's advancement or what stage of evolution one may have reached, but really they don't mean anything.
Yeah.
In a sense, they don't mean anything.
Yeah.
Because every plane that any person may be living on is only a state of being, it's only a state of they themselves have reached.
Yes.
It doesn't mean anything. In any case, all the spheres interpenetrate, and it's as one progresses and one becomes, shall we say, more aware, that you become, in a sense, part of. For instance, you can become aware of another plane of existence, if you like, but you're not necessarily of it. You've become conscious of it, like you are conscious of the spiritual spheres, but you're not part of the spiritual spheres yet, because you are still on the earth. You may mentally, as you are, and spiritually, part of this life, our spheres, but you're not really in those spheres, only in a sort of mental sense. The point is that we have the etheric body, which is as real to us and as natural to us as your physical body is to you, in which we express ourselves, or through which we express ourselves. But we may be in a state of being a mind even more advanced than that which our etheric body is functioning in, you see.
I see. Yes, that's very interesting, darling.
I mean, there are lots of people, I know many people, who are living in the same condition of life as myself, and whose thoughts are naturally in harmony, as they must be, with that life. But also, they are touching, if I can put it like that, other spheres, and becoming more conscious of those spheres. And as we become more advanced, so gradually we shall leave the sphere in which we are now, find ourselves now, and go into a different one.
Yes, do you sort of die again? Only,
no, I suppose the only way I can describe this is a sense of sleep, if you like, a form of sleep, it isn't really sleep, of going asleep, if you like, in one sphere and waking in another.
Yes.
And of course, also, one goes on journeys. This may strike you as odd, but it's true. One does sometimes go on a journey, perhaps what may seem a long distance, and yet in a sense it isn't a long distance. There again we come into a peculiar state of mind, because it is a state of mind which I can't find words and ways of describing to you. But occasionally we gather, peoples gather in a different place, and we make what you would call journeys. But we're not conscious of any fatigue or tiredness or even, in a sense, effort.
You go to visit sort of masters or teachers, do you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And there are great auditoriums, great lecture halls, places where one gathers, and we are shown, because we are shown this, we listen to the thoughts of the individual who's passing the knowledge to us. But as we are receiving his thoughts, also we are seeing in the atmosphere a picturization of what he's saying.
Yes, you've told me about that.
I've told
you. It's very thrilling, that, isn't it? Very, very nice. Do you meet Dean Ing? Would he be an advanced soul? You've greatly admired him, I think.
Yes, he has made great progress here. Mm. Like so many, I think he had to discard a lot of thoughts and ideas that had become important. They were important to him while he was on earth, naturally, as indeed these thoughts can often be important to most people, but he's had to change a lot of his views.
Yes, I
suppose. As indeed I've had to change a lot of mine, as you well know.
Yes.
But it's not so difficult once you begin to understand and accept, once you begin to realize and you begin to see the futility of many of the old ideas.
Yes.
You soon rid yourself of them. Most
some of the
people,
clergy are jibbing at the 39 articles now, darling.
It doesn't
know.
Surprise me at all, because after all they are terribly, terribly out of date, aren't they? I mean, after all said and done, when you come to analyse some of them, they're quite fantastically ridiculous.
Yes, of course they are.
In any case, I think that true religion must be divorced from its material trappings.
Yes.
Before I can ever hope to make any true progress.
Yes.
I don't think that religion as such, true religion, should in any way be tied to parliament or state.
No.
Or have be affected by it. Not deliberately, anyway.
No. No, I quite see that. There's one subject we haven't touched on at all in the book, and that is healing from your side, dear. A number of doctors who come to me, like Dr. Oldfield and my uncle, what are they doing in the great beyond?
Well, of course, it's quite a mistaken idea, I suppose, that many people have on your side that are interested in this subject, that a person who, shall we say, was a doctor, or a person, shall we say, who was an artist, will necessarily continue to do that particular kind of work or have that same interest. Of course it does happen that most do,
yes.
If only for a time, but people don't necessarily continue doing what they did on Earth.
They'd be able to help the Earth, wouldn't they, though, having
yes.
knowledge
oh, yes.
of the Earth's body.
In regard to doctors, people who dedicated their lives to healing the sick, naturally they are interested. But then again, you must remember that in a sense, we have no sick over here.
No.
It's true that we have a form of sickness, but there again, it's purely the mind. And therefore, individuals, doctors here in particular, are more interested in helping those whose state of mind needs changing.
Yes.
You see, there's no physical illness. There's no sort of... The only kind of illness is what people themselves, by their thoughts, produce here.
Mm-hmm.
If they think on the wrong lines, or if they still cling to the old ideas that they may have had when on Earth, then in a sense they are sick and they need to be helped, and their
yes.
attitude of mind has changed. I won't say they're exactly psychiatrists here, but it is a form of psychiatry. I mean, it's a form of mental assistance that is given,
yes.
mental help.
I expect you've got many forms of healing we don't know about over in your side.
But of
side.
Course we do take a lot of interest in the earth and regarding sick people. A lot of help is given, a lot of healing is given,
yes.
where possible. But of course there again we come back to the same beginning, and that is that everything depends on the individual. If they themselves will to some extent help themselves and cooperate, then we can work upon them. It's a state of mind again. It's a matter of thought force. Thy faith hath made thee whole, as Christ said to the woman who touched the hem of his garment. And so it is that one must have the realization of the power, which is, after all, the very power of life, the very vital force of life, which makes all things possible. If you believe, if you have faith,
yes.
that you can be cured, then with the help of the power of the Spirit, it is not impossible. It can be so. Of course, there are many people who are not cured, we know, who have great faith. But the point is this, that in some instances, obviously, the point has been reached where it would not be good for them to be cured. It is better that they should, in the normal way, come over here.
Oh, yes, I see.
You see, everyone seems to think that prayers should necessarily be answered. But then again, why should they? I mean, so many people pray for so many different things. Sometimes the prayers that they give out are selfish. Sometimes it is better that those particular prayers should not be answered. It may be that they have to work out some form of karma. They have to work out their own salvation. Sometimes suffering is necessary. I'm not saying that illness should be necessary. I think that in a world where people were thinking right, thinking on spiritual lines, there would not be no illness, there would be no pain. The whole of humanity is suffering through generations of wrong thinking. It has been said that the sins of the fathers fall on the children. This may seem on the surface to be most unjust, and yet in a sense it is not, because we are all product of past and present, and we are the product of all manner of thoughts by all manner of people. I mean, when we are born, we are to some extent, in the beginning, the product of our parents, We're the product of our teachers as we get older. We're the product of other people's thoughts. And wouldn't we like to assume that we are individuals, which of course in a sense we truly are individuals, but nevertheless, whatever individualism we may have, it's still a product of other people's thoughts, other people's ideas, which we've accumulated, some of which we've accepted, others we've discarded, and we've become an individual from the point of view that we have assimilated so much knowledge and experience. But the whole point is, what I'm trying to get at is, that none of us can escape from each other. We're all part of each other. And if the world is suffering, as we know it is, and has suffered constantly for centuries, but it can all be traced back in time to man himself. If man himself would change his way of thinking, he would automatically change his way of living. If only people could think on the right lines, if they could understand this truth, for instance, and realize the balance that should be between the material and the spiritual. You're in a material world, and therefore you must, to some extent, obviously live a material life, but there's no reason why it shouldn't be well balanced with the spiritual experience and spiritual knowledge. And if it were so, if people were living balanced lives, the spirit within oneself, for instance, was the dominating factor, not the material, and also the influences of others were of a similar nature, that the spirit was the dominating point, the dominating power, you would have an entirely different generation in the future, and certainly many of the evils of the world would gradually disappear, which would include sickness and pain and suffering, war and heaven knows what else that causes so much agony to the
mankind. But don't you think we're the victims too of the adulteration of the soil and the air?
Of course you are. You're the victim. But don't you see that man himself, through generations of time, has changed his course? Man has set many changes. He's brought about many changes. Even now, you're polluting the soil, you're polluting the atmosphere, all these things, if they don't at this present moment bring about unhappiness and havoc, they will in the future.
Well, they will. I recently read a book called Silent Spring, showing how these chemicals are killing off the birds and the fishes and the...
All sorts of things will happen. You see, men, for instance, take drugs. Now, I'm not decrying sensible use of drugs under certain conditions, because we do know that in some senses they can be and are a great blessing, and they do save a great deal of unnecessary pain.
Yes.
But quite often drugs, when a person has become addicted to them particularly, they may help in some respect, but they often set up other troubles. They start other complaints, other illnesses. What may cure one thing, or help to cure one, can set up something else.
Yes, not getting at the root of the cause, is it?
You see, the real root must be reached if one is to effect not only a cure, but a preventative. Point is, the thing is not necessarily always to cure. Surely the thing is to prevent, make it impossible for certain things to happen in regard to sickness and ill health, cancer, for instance, which of course we are very interested in. There are quite a number of doctors working on cancer here and hoping to infiltrate their thoughts through to various doctors on your side for the good of humanity. But the point is that cancer is something which has got a tremendous hold on mankind, which man himself and no one else has brought into being. It was never there in the first place. Man himself, by his wrong thinking and wrong living, has brought this evil to the forefront.
Yes.
The thing is, not to find a cure, that's important, of course, and many doctors are working on that, but a preventative. But the only real preventative, surely, is for man to change his nature, to change his outlook, and in consequence his habits and his way of life.
Yes.
But you're pouring so much evil into the world. Man himself, I don't think man realizes, I don't think the nations as a whole realize, the evil forces that are being let loose in the world. And I'm talking here not of tangible things necessarily. Goodness knows we know atomic power is tangible enough, but I'm talking particularly of mental Yes,
I see.
Because it's ridiculous for scientists, for instance, on your side to say that these things are being invented to protect mankind, to make war impossible. All these things that they say are evasive things. They're not truthful things, too. Because the more you pile up, the more you create weapons of destruction, eventually, somewhere, sometime, something can, and possibly, most probably will happen, even if it were by accident, rather than design. I don't want to be pessimistic. I don't want to say that I think there's going to be a major war. I don't think
no,
there
you
is.
Said there wouldn't be. I think you said that,
yes,
that
but you
man would come to the brink, but not
but
go
the
over.
The point is this, that he's got to come to the very brink. He's got to come to a decision. And that will be, I think, not so far distant when the nations will realize this terrible position in which they find themselves, and they'll start discarding. They'll have to, because if they don't, something would go up eventually.
Yes.
I think this has got to come. I think the nations will realize, America and Russia in particular, the potential dangers we all know. I mean, they are so opposite in so many ways. They're so afeard of each other that the very fact of this terrible fear in itself is the dynamite that could start it all off.
Yes, but of course they're all getting so interested in space now, you know,
well,
sending
hope.
Someone to the moon,
yes,
and whatnot.
Of course, what we are hoping is this, and I think this is something I may have mentioned before, that with all these experiments that are going on, all these scientists are trying desperately to discover more about about outer space, that they will stumble accidentally,
yes,
on a means of communication between your world and ours. And when that is scientifically proved, when it is possible, as it could well be, eventually for people on your side to be in communication in a scientific way with us, I think then it is more than likely that we shall see the beginning of a changed world.
Yes, it surely will.
That's what we're praying and hoping for.
Yes.
That they will stumble, accidentally, so it will seem anyway, on the possibility of communication scientifically between our world and yours. Perhaps something may yet come in the form of a television where they can tune in on certain vibrations of certain instruments on a high wavelength, far beyond anything they've yet discovered, which will make it possible for us to register and communicate. That, I think, will be the beginning of a new life, a new way of thought for the whole of mankind.
Oh, that lovely.
I'm sure,
yes,
it will come. It's got to come.
Yes.
It's the one hope that we have of saving the world from,
yes,
itself. Because when this truth is generally known, generally understood and accepted, when the fear of death is taken from mankind, when people realize the futility of continuing this nonsensical hatred between nations and peoples, and when they can see the futility of everything that has gone before in the way of this intense, well, hatred.
Yes.
Because it is this terrible sort of fear that has brought people to the brink and has created unhappiness untold. I mean, we've had two major wars in the last 50 years or so, and it seems to me that you'd have thought that people would have learned their lesson. And I think the average person has no desire whatsoever for war. And I don't think that, generally speaking, the leaders of nations want it. But the point is that they go on, and of course they can bring about such a tragedy by the very fact that they're so feared. It's taking away this fear,
yes,
that we've got to work on.
Yes, well, that's very wonderful.
One day it'll come, I'm convinced of that, that,
yes,
man will see, he will know and he will understand this tremendous truth. And it will be the basis of all life. It will break down all the barriers between nations, between religious bodies. I think it will unite the world. This is what we're trying desperately to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much intolerance in your world. There's so much fear. Intolerance and fear, these two things seem to me to be the greatest of evils, because they create in turn all manner of of unhappiness. They bring about all sorts of things which mankind has suffered from in the past and will continue to suffer from until he learns. Mankind must learn the futility of these things.
Yes.
We go on hoping.
Yes, well, it's magnificent, darling. How is your father, your mother?
Very well, they're very well. It always seems silly when I say they're very well. Of course they're very well, because there's no reason why they shouldn't be.
Yes.
They are extremely happy. And they send their love and blessings to you.
Yes.
You're coming next week, aren't you?
They're coming on Tuesday, yes. And then that will be the close of the book, because...
Yes.
Then I hope to start again in the autumn.
Well, I hope so.
Yes.
I'm hoping that we should be able to write many books.
Well,
and in between now and next time, I must think of a blurb.
Oh, that will be kind. Yes, thank you.
I must go.
Yes.
All my love and bye-bye.
Thank you very, very much,
and
darling. Don't forget this afternoon.
I'll be there. Do my best.
Yes,
I hope the man's able to see me.
Yes,
I
thank you.
I was going to say something else.
Yes, I knew you were.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
I hope he's in a good humour.
I'm not going to mention the weather.
You did very well, didn't you?
Which one, Flash, think that was quite his greatest one, don't you?